I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Shakira can, like, smash the shit out of a sporting-type context, can't she?
Yes.
I mean, 2010 World Cup song, it doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Weirdly, like, I have, like, in the days since, I have more than once wound up playing Waka Waka just, like, because it's got it in my head now. Like,
yeah.
I've got to hear it.
I'm just worried that we'll get more of this in football, to be honest.
Oh, my God.
I just think that's a concern to me. Like, evening games in the Premier League, you'll have, like, Jason Derulo come on. Or some weird stuff like this.
Well, I think that's more likely a Belgium home game.
That's how you bring back the magic of the cup, guys.
Yeah, oh, God. Oh, God.
The word crisis is overused in football, isn't it? I think it's been correctly used in connection with Barcelona at the moment. With, of course, Messi coming out on social media and challenging Eric Abidal, who came out and said that the reason they got rid of Ernesto Valverde is because of the players. And it's not just that Messi has reacted so boldly to this when he doesn't really say much of any interest, really, publicly, does he? It's the fact that everyone knows that there's this contractual situation in the background where he can unilaterally rescind at the end of the season and walk away. Now, there are other aspects to this Barcelona situation. This is undoubtedly the biggest one.
Yeah, I mean, there's layers and layers here. And of course, exactly as you've said, what sort of makes it so tense is this theoretical possibility that Messi could say, you know what? I'm sick of it.
Theoretical is a useful word here, isn't it?
I think so. And I was asking you guys this just before we came on, like, do we actually believe he could go? And my instinct is no. My instinct is that there's no way that Messi, who has been so vocal in sort of talking about Barcelona and how he wants to stay there and how he wants to end his career, how he views these things. But there's only so many outs here. You know, there's an out in which Abidal makes some, I would assume it'd have to be very public at this point, like apology to Messi and says, look, I messed up and I this thing.
Can you climb down without resigning, do you think?
Or exactly. Or someone else's head has to roll, like to make this okay. Because it's, you know, it's very direct what Messi has done. And I don't blame him for it. I think you could, you know, you could turn it around and say, because basically what he's saying and what he's sort of trying to point out here is everyone's got a responsibility, and the sporting director's responsibility is to look after changes of management, signings. Don't put that on the players. Don't make that about us, unless you're planning to sort of make a very specific accusation, which wasn't made. But on the flip side, I think you could say in the past, Messi has sort of said, well, we didn't sign the players that I was sort of hoping things were going to happen.
As recently as last summer, in
fact. Right. So you could say that he's being hypocritical, but it doesn't matter. It actually doesn't matter if he's being hypocritical. It doesn't matter if he's being fair. All that matters in the end is that he's Leo Messi and he's the kingpin here. He's the most important piece in the Barcelona puzzle. And everything now is going to completely switch analogies from puzzles to solar systems. Everything's going to orbit around him.
And Lars, you don't think that him leaving is a genuine possibility. You just think he's jockeying for position, don't you?
Yeah. Listen, if I was Leo Messi, it's a hard thing to try to imagine, but okay, if you try to put yourself in his shoes, I think you have genuine reasons to be a little bit unhappy with how the club's been run, no? Because if you
but for a long time. For a long time, right?
I was just thinking the other day, when was the last time Barcelona made a signing that really worked out?
I think we're
sort of back in 2014. Mm-hmm. I think we're back into sort of Rakitic and Ter Stegen sort of territory for the last time. Okay, like Paulinho was okay. Vidal has been useful. I mean, there have been guys who've come in and contributed to the
cause. But they're not the future.
No, but guys, when was the last time this club actually made a signing that just was straight into the team? That guy is really good, you know, sorted. That guy's going to be here for 5-6 years and just really make the team a lot better. That hasn't happened for over half a decade.
And if you're Leo Messi, they've spent like a billion euros in that time.
If you're Leo Messi and you must be aware that he's, you know, arguably the best player of all time, he doesn't have an infinite number of years left at the very, very highest level. You must look at this and say, guy, like, just build me a team that works and that is good enough. And right, they've been winning La Liga, but they've just kind of been making do almost.
I mean, has this sort of been percolating ever since Neymar went in a way? Because I think you can say it's one of the biggest triumphs, the biggest triumph of Ernesto Valverde being in charge, that, you know, we've talked about it before, how there was the backdrop of political unrest in Catalonia, but also a backdrop of unrest in terms of how people viewed the board. And people have viewed the board with suspicion, if not outright ridicule, for a long time at Barcelona. But the fact that Valverde made it all about Messi again, he set up a system of 4-4-2 initially that really, really suited him, that got him playing arguably some of his best football in years. And funnily enough, now Valverde stepped away. I'm not saying the two things are inextricably linked by any stretch of the imagination, but the last couple of years have been the first time in a while that people haven't been wringing their hands about, oh, are they wasting the last years of Messi's prime, or are they, you know, wasting the last few years of fantastic Messi? Whereas now, as you say, Lars, we're thinking about that again, aren't we?
Yeah, maybe that is why this sort of this little sort of dig at the players with regards to Valverde is something that pushed Messi over the edge, because Messi must be aware that Valverde didn't always, I think history will come to see him as someone who did a very decent job under difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
And made the squad with all its issues good enough to win La Liga, if nothing else. And of course,
with some comfort.
Yeah. And they had some meltdowns in Europe, yes. But this is a suboptimal squad in terms of all the pieces you have there. And over the years, the additions haven't really worked out. And he still found a way to win the league. And I guess if you're Messi, you would feel a little bit defensive about him and the players' willingness to work for him being pointed out as a problem.
But, Nicky, how do we look at how Barcelona have got to try and manage this from here on in? I mean, this board has looked weak on a number of occasions, not least when Neymar went. Of course, the fact that Coutinho, Dembélé haven't worked out, and Dembélé, goodness knows where he is after that injury that's going to probably keep him out for the rest of the season. Where is he going forward? Where is he in terms of what his value actually is now? The fact is that Messi does have this unique power, doesn't he? I mean, one of the first questions for Zinedine Zidane in his press conference this week is, can you actually see Messi away from Barcelona? Like, people are considering it as a possibility, and he does have this incredible power. I mean, Monica Planas in Marca said, Leo Messi chose Instagram stories to respond to Eric Abidal, which is quite an adolescent strategy. Now, of course, this is Marca getting stuck in, but where is the view of Messi depending on where this goes next?
I mean, I suppose it depends whose view you're asking for. I think the whole world outside of, certainly outside of Spain and probably outside of Barcelona, any club that's might even consider itself vaguely, possibly rich enough to have a go, is looking at it and thinking, this is fascinating. This is something we, you know, we don't care if he looks a little bit petulant. We'd have him in a heartbeat here. Of course you would. He's Leo Messi. I mean, even I, you know, this sort of had this little tickle in the back of my head thinking, well, we got Ronaldo to Italy. If we could just get Messi over, that'd be spectacular. Get him at Inter and we could do the retirement version of a great rivalry. I think, you know, more realistically, because I don't actually think he's going to go at the end of this, the people whose view is sort of most essential. I mean, you think of Bartomeu, the president, and the fact that I think he's up for re-election, probably not going to stand for re-election, but he may well have someone who he wants to put for re-election.
Yeah, this is next year, the elections,
year.
Isn't it?
Yeah. You know, this is your legacy at this point. This is, you know, on you to sort out, and very much will influence everything going forward in that, in terms of if Messi goes, obviously, you know, that's the end of it and you're going to be remembered as the person who blew it.
Yeah.
And if you manage to resolve it, then it was almost certainly going to be, well, are you going to get Messi's approval? Are you going to be the person who Messi is encouraging the club, I guess the electors to vote for? It's a hugely delicate situation for a number of people. I completely agree with Lars that the transfers going back for years and years and years have put this club in a really sort of difficult spot.
Over a decade. I mean, you could go back to Ibrahimovic and Eto'o, couldn't you?
But and this is, you know, now a super fascinating year ahead, because it's not just that you've got to keep Messi. The fact is that Messi's there and the team is bad right now. I mean, bad is relative, I get it. But we're talking about like a disaster for a team that's won the last two La Liga titles and is, what, 3 points off first place? Mm. Nevertheless, you know, part of the reason they supposedly didn't manage to get a deal across the line this January is because they're thinking of, oh, we're trying to sign Lautaro Martinez in the summer. And I'm thinking, well, to be fair, Martinez is flipping great. Like, I really rate him at Inter, and I'd be sad as someone who does cover Italian football first and foremost, sad to see him go, actually. But the problem is, like, some of the signings they've made, you look and you're like, well, that was a can't miss. Like, Griezmann was a can't-miss signing.
Yeah.
You know, you think after some of the signings they've made, like Dembélé, where you think, okay, there's a bit of a gamble there. But then it has missed.
Yeah, and Dembélé's one thing. I think some of these big signings they've made are great players that haven't had an obvious place in the team. I mean, Coutinho is the poster child for that, right?
For sure.
Coutinho is great. But as the equally great Tim Vickery, even greater Tim Vickery, I'd say, pointed out at the time, is that where does he fit in that sort of 4-3-3 system they play? That Coutinho doesn't have an obvious place there, and he's always from day one looked like an answer looking for a question. You know, he hasn't worked there, and I think you can make the same case about Griezmann. He's one who's also has to adapt his game to fit into that system, and Dembélé hasn't worked for the fitness and I think you would say non-sporting reasons maybe in some cases, but those two massive signings they've made were both unquestionably good players, but also players that didn't have an obvious place in the team to slot into. And I would say the same about Lautaro. Like, Lautaro is great playing off of Lukaku. That works brilliantly. Where does he fit into this Barcelona system?
They're very much their power is in in the pair, isn't it?
And, yeah, and surprisingly, because I never thought it would, because they look like two number nines to me. But actually, I think that Lautaro is something a little bit different. He's definitely different to what Lukaku is as a number nine. And I get what you're saying, Lars. Where would you put him? You put him ahead of Messi in the middle? Like, is
weird.
That going to work in the same way?
No,
no, it's not.
Actually, Rodrigo is the link that makes more sense to me. Even though he's not a spectacular player, at least he's a really hard-working forward guy who can do the sort of more selfless sort of Pedro-type job of pulling people out of position and keeping width and this sort of thing. That's something Rodrigo could do, maybe. But and the point is, it's so weird what they did in January as well, I think. The sort of farming out of a bunch of young players. Like, they've all gone out on loan, like Todibo and Moussa Wagye and Alenia and Perez have all gone out on loan, but three of them have options to buy, right? Mm-hmm. So these are young players who at some point have been considered very promising or interesting, who haven't really had a chance to show anything and who are now being sent off. And if I'm a Barcelona fan, it's been a while since we saw, like, Ansu Fati aside, it's a while since we saw La Masia produce anything like the sort of the talent that we associate with that club. And like Carlos Perez was probably not the big solution to anything, but he's a guy who I think has gone through the system there, has shown enough that you'd expect him to get. I mean, he's had five more La Liga starts than my dog, and that's fewer than I think someone like him should be entitled to get to sort of try to show that he can do something there.
And people would think, I agree, right, that Pedro is not Iniesta or a Xavi, but a very important contributor. And yeah, you could argue he was in that same sort of role. I think when you look at Barcelona going forward, it is a definitely a time of crisis, as we were saying at the top, because I think you look at Rakitic coming out and publicly talking about his unhappiness about them trying to force him out. You've got Vidal's agent trying to sue for an unpaid bonus. And again, these are players who've been important for them this season, even though they would have ideally had younger players being important for them. I wonder, though, is Abidal, I don't know, you could argue it's self-inflicted because of how he came out and spoke, but is he the silent victim in this, really? Because it makes me feel sad that Abidal was such a good player for them, and then he was a guy who, you know, when he came back in 2011, like 6 weeks after surgery on that tumor to lift the European Cup, the Champions League with Carles Puyol at Wembley, it was one of those iconic modern Barcelona moments. And surely him becoming sporting director was a moment where they're saying, actually, we're getting our shit together upstairs, because it didn't work with Puyol himself. He got really frustrated and left. And whereas you look at a club like Bayern, who like place an absolute premium on having people who they see as having, you know, some sort of soul in the club, moving upstairs and running things, that's not working out for Barcelona. They can't get it right at board level at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting, again, going through those signings we've made, and you think about how many sporting directors the club has gone through since 2014,
yeah,
when Zubizarreta was sacked.
Wait, is it like 4 and 5 years or something
it's
now?
Something like
I
that,
think if
yeah.
you've gone through that number of sporting directors, I mean, unless you've just hired complete lunatics, which they haven't, then there's something wrong institutionally rather than the individuals that have gone through there.
I agree, and Abidal feels like an appointment that you would even pick thinking, okay, well, you know what, like, him and Messi, they played together for 6 seasons, like, they know each other, they're friends, they go back a long way. But I mean, this was a really stupid thing to say. It was.
Yeah, it was.
And that is sort of, what do you want from a sporting director? Obviously, there's like decisions about scouting and decisions that are sort of really fundamental to that job that are maybe some of them even beyond our scrutiny as journalists, things that people inside the building can see. Mm. But in terms of what your public facing role is, sporting directors should not be saying things that rock the boat at all. They just shouldn't. Like, that's just not, like, you know, managers might get away with it sometimes. Sporting directors should be as bland as they can be publicly. And this was an unnecessary drawing of players into the situation.
Wat een bal! En ik zei het, één keer sta je geen buitenspel. Paf! 1-1! Bang! In de face!
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Joy elsewhere in Spain, though, with Roberto Soldado shining in the Copa del Rey.
Bobby Soldier.
Getting Granada, who've had a really good season, back into the semi-finals. The bit I liked about this the most, about these two goals, against his former club, Valencia, there was none of that, I'm not celebrating against my former club. I suppose he doesn't score often enough these days, Lars, to be a chooser.
Well, I mean, he's got 2 and 18 in the league, so that's kind of like Tottenham form, really. But I think maybe he's a guy who works really hard. He can finish, even though he doesn't seem to do it that often these days. But for a team like Granada, having someone with his experience to lead the line, I guess that's a good place for him to end up.
That's it. I mean, it is quite a young team, Granada, isn't it? There's a lot of young talent there. He's going to be, what, 34? Five in May. I mean, he's getting on now, and he clearly does contribute something. I mean, what I find remarkable is in amongst those like 3 La Liga goals, Nicky, 9 bookings already this season. I mean, this is a guy who properly gets involved.
Big fan of that.
Love it. Yeah, do you know there was he's one of those players, Soldado, and actually I think we were talking about this before. He did an interview with Sid Lowe end of last year. And one of the things that sort of stuck with me from that was him saying, oh, you know, basically if I could have another go at life, you were reincarnated or something, I'd want to be a footballer again. And like, I just think like, I know that's like an obvious thing to say, look, a footballer's life's pretty good. But like a lot of people might be like, oh, you know, there's other things that I would love to experience. He loves what he does. And I think that's why, even if he's not scoring many goals, he's still getting stuck in, obviously.
And it's someone who's, even at the sort of lowest points of his career, like his work ethic has never been questioned, his attitude's never been questioned. I mean,
he's never been detested by the fans at Tottenham.
No, Tottenham fans were not known for always being the most patient of football supporters. Ooh. They were remarkably patient with him and incredibly supportive. Because I think, I was actually at White Hart Lane for quite a few games when he was there, and you can just, the effort was there, the desire was there, all the things that you want to see as a football fan was always there, even when you'd understand it if his head dropped a little bit. You didn't really see that. He went into every game with the right attitude and the right approach, and it just didn't work for him in England. And he spoke about that, I think, as well in the same interview, about how he just couldn't quite adjust to how things were a little bit different.
Yeah, and you know, I suppose the thing about him that was in one way the most attractive, his work rate just came to be the only thing, didn't it? I mean, which is a shame. But Valencia, obviously the champions of the Copa del Rey, getting knocked out of the competition, they haven't taken it particularly well, or the Valencian press at least hasn't taken it particularly well, with Super Deporte having the headline, VAR 2, Valencia 1. I'm sure this will be like crashingly familiar to some of our listeners. There was a bit of a climb down from that afterwards because Rodrigo had one goal knocked out for offside before he did eventually score the equaliser. And then the penalty was pretty dubious, from which Soldado eventually scored the winner.
Sure. You know, it just occurs to me now with this sort of widespread contempt for VAR, which is in some cases justified. Just occurs to me, referees must be loving this. It's a great lightning rod for them. You don't see the sort of l'arbitro to the Valencia nil thing. You know, whereas in the past we would whinge about the referee, now it's all about VAR. It's brilliant. Yeah. If you're a ref, you must be loving this.
Yeah, maybe not so much if you're Roberto Soldado. I mean, you know, he's done...
famously not a ref.
Yeah, but I think you think I've scored those goals. I deserve the love. I've celebrated, so even they can get a bit angry about it. And someone's talking about something else. I mean, that sucks. Surely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, I'm not quite sure. I'm also not sure why a Spanish newspaper would use the Italian word for ref like I just did in my suggestion for a headline there. But let's move on. It's a very continental show. It's fine.
Of course, there was cup action in Germany as well with the DFB Pokal.
A lot of fun, I thought this.
Yeah, a few little shocks. Well, you know, I'm very keen on always talking to our listeners about the free football that's available out there.
Yeah.
And I was tweeting about this during the week, the fact that all the DFB Pokal games were available live on YouTube. It's
very nice.
You just type German football in the search engine. And it's actually called the German Football Channel. And they had some great matches. The earliest one was Eintracht versus Leipzig. And we'll come back to how Leipzig are having this little wobble at the moment. They went out to Eintracht with André Silva getting on the score sheet and Kostic having a good game as well. But we're going to look first at Werder Bremen versus Borussia Dortmund. Now, I looked at Werder Bremen and how things have absolutely fallen to bits there in my column in The Guardian this week. And yet, Dortmund, having started 2020 with 15 goals in their first three Bundesliga games, it always felt as if some little pratfall was around the corner. And lo and behold.
Yes, a significant pratfall. You know, it's always funny when people who don't normally watch a team all suddenly start watching it. This is obviously what's happening in Norway now, where a lot of fresh eyes are looking upon this Dortmund team. I have like sort of old friends from, as I may have mentioned on this show, Erling Haaland is from the same little town in Norway as I am. I think I've mentioned it pretty much every show I've been on.
No, I'm sure you have mentioned
it. Yeah. As I have like people who are, you know, casual football fans who would watch the Premier League every weekend who are now watching Dortmund games.
Right.
Even if there's, I mean, I had a lot of people tweet, I think it was this weekend when Dortmund clashed with Man United or something, and a lot of people are going, this is really odd, I'm choosing to watch the Bundesliga instead of Man United, which for Norwegian people is a strange sort of, but anyway, what I'm getting to is I'm seeing a lot of tweets from like Norwegian football Twitter who don't normally watch Dortmund going, all right, they've done well signing Haaland. Should they not also have signed a defender or two in January? Because if you're not used to watching Dortmund play, or indeed you're not used to watching a lot of German football, there's some weird stuff going on in that defence.
Well, I wanted to ask you about this, actually, Nicky. Part of the defensive solution for Dortmund has been suggested to be Emre Can, which is interesting to me because, of course, I think it's a good thing that they brought him in because there's too much pressure on Axel Witsel. It feels like they rely on him a little bit too much in midfield. Emre Can is a top player, you know, just because he ended up in the situation he did end up in Juventus, very unhappy and excluded from the Champions League squad. I think they've got themselves a good signing. It has been suggested, and he was only on the bench for this game against Werder, that maybe he'll play this weekend. There's been the suggestion that they'll use him in a back three. Now, I tend to think there's... Yeah. I'm all for keeping control of the ball and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I realise defending has changed and our perception of what a centre-half should be has changed. However, if there's the one area you think are really lacking at the back, and the game that pushed Julian Weigl over the edge is when he was playing one of the three centre-backs against Paderborn, and he had, well, it was dreadful. He looked like a pensioner in a school sports day.
It's a strange image.
It is, isn't it? Emre Can, as one of a back three, seems to feed into that problem rather than help, or am I missing something?
Well, he's not fast. I think that's the first like thing when you think about, or when I think about Emre Can, and certainly the thing which held him back a lot at Juventus is he's not fast. Right. And
did that hold back Juventus's midfield in general, do you think?
I think he was, it's the same narrative as maybe some of what we're talking about with Barcelona. It's signing a player because he's an interesting player when there was no real thought about where he was going to fit in that team.
And because he was free.
Yeah, and Juventus have sort of...
Aaron Ramsey says hello, by the way.
Yeah, well, exactly. But actually, interestingly, you could draw some parallels there between Barca and Juventus, but the good thing that Juventus have done is mostly made these signings on players who didn't cost them transfer fees. Yeah. So still spending a lot on wages and bonuses, though. But that would be my instant hesitation. I mean, I think you could make a back three with Emre Can in it because, successful back threes, really good back threes, very often have... roles, they have different. It's easy for me to go to, so apologies. But the obvious one is, that Juventus back three when it was Barzagli, Bonucci, and Chiellini, it made sense because you had three very distinct footballers. Barzagli, who was great at marking, Bonucci was great at putting his foot on the ball and bringing it out, and could be afforded a free role because it's a back three. Mm. And Chiellini, who was your aggressor, the person who sort of could go and take on a man and sort of bring that physicality, and that works. So if you sort of put Can in that sort of setup, I guess, as a Bonucci, as someone with a more free role with the distribution, sure, I can kind of see it working, but you have to have the right things around him. And certainly the way Dortmund play, which is nothing like how Juventus play, with such a sort of reckless, at times, attacking mindset, I really think that pace is important. Pace to make up for things that happen in front of you is important.
Yeah, and, I mean, Dan Axel Zagadou has arguably been their most important defender this season because he does have that athleticism that clearly Mats Hummels doesn't have, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all of it, but it's part of why Chris Smalling has been such a hit for Roma. It's because Fonseca wants to play a high press, wants to play this sort of... And before Smalling got there, it was just not enough pace there at the back. And Smalling can run. And it's... With defenders, there's a horses for courses thing, and I'm not close to the idea, as you say, football has changed, defending has changed, like the Can could be a good defender. Whether or not it will work for him here in this setting is a tricky question.
He is an odd player, Emre Can, just as in terms of his skill set.
I agree with that.
It's really hard to pin down. Like, he's clearly very good, and he can do many things well, but it's clearly hard to what exactly is his best position and what is his best role in a team.
You know, you could say the same thing about Adrien Rabiot, who's a different player, a distinct player. But I often looked at Rabiot and thought, if we're moving into an age where being a centre-half isn't all about just winning 20 headers a game and putting in six tackles a game, I quite fancy Rabiot as a centre-back, especially for a team that has a lot of the ball.
So interesting switch of play there, Andy. I didn't quite see that coming. Just straight to Rabiot. No, I can imagine Can kind of working in the back line as a guy who steps into midfield, but maybe for a team that has a bunch of possession and when there are other people who have pace around him. I mean, like what Josh Kimmich does for Bayern, like you could see Emre Can doing, like starting out as a right back, but moving a lot into midfield because you have 70% possession most games anyway, so you might as well do that.
Right. That's why Bonucci was a much better fit at Juventus than at Milan, for instance, because you dominate games and he gives you, you dominate the ball generally at Juventus and he gives you another outlet, another way of distributing the ball. If you're getting too tightly pressed in midfield because everyone's concentrating on Pjanic, here's your extra distributor from a different angle, from a different spot on the pitch. But you do need the ball, which is when Dortmund get the ball, it's not they want to get rid of it. They just want to put it in the net 3 seconds later. Like
exactly. Exactly. That's it, isn't it?
And so Favre is going for the sort of 7-4 victory still, I think. Should be fun.
Well, if we're going back to Erling Haaland for a second.
Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. I think, is that one of the reasons that, and he's still only started one game because he came on as a substitute in this Werder Bremen game because he's, a bit knackered, isn't he? We'll come to that in a second. But we will come to that in a second, I promise. But is part of the reason he's adapted so quickly because the style completely suits him?
The style suits him. I also think he's the type of player, it's like the Dortmund... the other attacking players they have, they've been looking for someone like him.
Yeah.
Like they have Sancho, they have Royce, they have Julian Brandt, they have Thorgan Hazard. They've got all these players who are great in terms of their approach play around the box and in terms of their way of getting into dangerous positions. They've just needed someone at the back post to square the ball to, and they've not really had that, like someone who makes the runs a proper centre forward would make.
That was
and
his it's like exact immediately goal, wasn't it, against Werder.
When you yeah. and just put him into the team and immediately they have someone to look for instead of like another sort of group of sort of short technically accomplished guys who are all sort of running around. Like they have a focal point there now, and it's just fallen into place so quickly. And I'm going to mention it because I thought it was really funny. He was being interviewed by Norwegian TV after the Köln game when he started. That was the Köln game when he started, wasn't
Union.
It? Union, sorry.
Union at the weekend.
Oh,
yeah.
It's terrible. It was Union. He started the game and he was being interviewed after the game, and he was like, oh, it's your first game in front of the yellow wall, you know, what was it like? And I think they were looking for a sort of, oh, it's a great experience type answer. And his first thought was, it was tough, you know, physically it was tough. He's like, yeah, no, it was heavy. Because we forget that he's basically been injured for a couple of weeks and he hasn't really trained, and like he hasn't been starting, not because he's being carefully integrated into the team, just because he's not really fit enough to play 90 minutes yet. So this sort of bizarre scoring run he's been on has been in spite of him, by his own admission, just not being match fit.
And there could be definitely the opportunity for him to get super match fit over the next little while, not just because his goals demand that he's in the team, but Marco Reus is injured. And Lucien Favre is getting a lot of criticism for this because it felt like Dortmund maybe weren't fully switched on for this game, but yet Lucien Favre started Royce. This is about the same point that he got injured last season. And I don't think it's unreasonable to say that if Royce had stayed fit last season, well, they would have won the league.
Seasons about almost like about Dortmund. I mean, he's so pivotal to them, but
maybe not so much this season because he's not been in great form.
Maybe.
And they have got alternatives.
But he's a really important character, and I still think it's an odd one from Favre. Like you, I know the cup is great. Like the and just watching the German Cup games this week with like full stadiums, really good atmosphere.
Yeah,
it was really
great,
really great occasions. But like you're 3 points off the top of the league. You've got a huge Champions League tie against Paris Saint-Germain coming up. You know that his legs are made of glass. Just maybe let Marco Reus sit that one out. Is all I'm saying.
I mean, with Reus, it's about leadership as well, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, he's a great captain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, my mind has already gone into another player I don't want us to not mention, which is Giovanni Reyna.
Yes!
American.
Oh my God, amazing.
What a first goal to score in that game. It's magnificent.
I mean, that is the thing. We can talk about the defensive problems and other mistakes they make, but God, this team just continues to discover players like that, don't they? You think pretty good as well, I'm sure, for their marketing team with Pulisic being gone. Like, where can we get another American to keep the Americans interested? Got one already.
He looks so ready, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's an astonishing goal. And I think probably if you're Werder, who've, you know, won one home league game all season, and they were quite lucky to win that against Augsburg back in August. If you're them, you're thinking, how have they gone on about Dortmund for 10 minutes? We won! David Selke scored! Come on!
Yeah, no, and listen, the other thing, I do agree he hasn't been quite itself, and I think it was it our friend of the show, Ryan Hunt, who I think mentioned on the internet that actually it's not one of those things you want to say out loud, but actually maybe Royce hasn't been quite himself.
Yeah.
But I remember watching the Amazon documentary series on Dortmund, which is a bit of a mixed bag, but there's some interesting stuff in there. And one of the things you really get a sense of is how important he is around the place and how much he is a captain and a leader of that team. And I do think taking him out is a significant blow. And it's someone who has those injury issues. Now, it was odd that he played this game. It really was.
There were a full programme of midweek games in France as well. But we can't really get past this without talking about Dimitri Payet's goal against Saint-Étienne, can we, Lars? Which was dribbled in from the left-hand side. And he smashed it in past one of the better goalkeepers in Ligue 1, in Stéphane Ruffier, from an impossible angle. But, you know, people will look at that initially and think, okay, did he mean to score? He definitely meant to score.
Absolutely.
You look at his body shape, you look at the way, before the ball's even gone in. He's kind of running off just before it goes over the line. He's sort of running off to say, "Yeah, I'm dope. I'm just going to do a little knee skid in the corner."
And this is very subjective, because part of the great thing about our jobs is that we get to watch just an unholy amount of football, and we can call it work. It's really good. I'm guessing our listeners are also of the type of people who maybe listen and watch more football than what's healthy. So maybe you can identify with some of this, dear listener. But I have a great love for goals and passes and just players who do stuff that's, it's not just hard to pull off technically, but stuff that's really stupid to try. Like, I mean, stuff that will get you told off by the coach. Because when you watch a lot of football, you see patterns. Like, you get used to saying, okay, that's the right decision in that situation, that ball should go there, okay, from that position you should probably shoot, and you, in your mind, you see a couple of moves ahead, you're used to seeing. And this is one of those things where I think occasionally Messi can be less, you don't warm to Messi as much as to other players, because he's so logical. Like, his decisions are almost always makes the right decisions. He doesn't always surprise you that much. You're blown away by his consistency and how technically brilliant he executes everything, but he doesn't always do stuff that surprises you. Like, I have a great love for Ibra, because he kept doing bizarre things. It's like, you shouldn't shoot from there, Ibra. No, you shouldn't karate kick that one. And it's like all this sort of, if you go through Ibra's highlight compilation, there's so many weird things. And I'm a big fan of that. I'm going to get angry comments over that Messi thing, but I'll stand by it. The point about this Payet goal, if you watch it, it's completely the wrong decision to go for goal. Like, you shouldn't do it. It's really daft. But he does, obviously, completely catches the goalkeeper by surprise as well. And it really is artfully done.
That's why it works.
Yeah,
the keeper knows it's a dumb thing to do.
Yeah,
he did.
Yeah. Exactly. You wouldn't dare put it in my near post. You absolutely wouldn't dare put it in my near post. The other thing I enjoyed about that game is when Nemanja Radonjic, who's really improved this season, scored the second goal right near the end and approached the St Etienne cop, just pointing at the Marseille badge on his chest. It reminded me of the great Michel Bastos scoring a goal in for Lyon at that end. It was a winner in a Coupe de France match, and he tapped the badge several times, sort of whooshed it with both hands towards the home end, and did a massive knee skid in front, and it caused like a massive set to. And bear in mind that St Etienne versus Lyon is a massive derby, of course. And then they asked him about it afterwards, because the St Etienne players kicked off. They were really unhappy. The crowd were unhappy. There was a stoppage in the game. And Bastos rather disingenuously said, "I always celebrate goals like that." He said, "Really? Do you?" by ostentatiously baiting the fans of your deadly rivals, I'm not sure you do, because you only get the chance to do it twice a season. But talking of meltdowns, I mean, Monaco had a good win in the week, a win that they really needed, with Stefan Jovetic coming back and scoring a goal against Angers to get them past there. But we've still got in our mind the loss to Nîmes last weekend, because not only are Nîmes like arguably the worst team in the division, so it's bad for Monaco to lose to them, but you had this extraordinary situation where they had two players sent off in the same move. Bakayoko, whose tackle was upgraded by VAR from a yellow to a red. And then after this, Gelson Martins, not a hard man by any stretch of the imagination, a kind of flair player, completely lost it, shoved the referee twice. Now, normally we would say by the time we listen to this, we'll know what sort of punishment he gets, because the French League's disciplinary committee sits on a Thursday. But what they will do, because it's quite a big case, is they will like provisionally suspend him while they look into the case and get all the evidence on it and the various witness statements and stuff. I mean, his season is probably done.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be. It's one of those things where you could look at it. I appreciate you could look at it and go, you know, it's not, the shoves are not going to cause injury to the referee. They're not those sort of shoves. It's not like a fist thrown. But I just think it's about, with things like this, you can sort of look at it and go, it's heat of the moment. But this is why then you have idiots in parks actually threatening referees. This is why you have amateur level, like real nonsense going on. If you don't set an example at this level of the game, that you absolutely cannot do that to a referee. Like, you can't expect it from people at a lower level. And that's why I think it has to be a big ban. And, you know, I mean, he hasn't been in the squad recently, but for Martins, that's surely any hope of a Euro 2020 call out the window as well.
Yeah, and he's got impact sub written all over him, hasn't he? The sort of way he plays. I mean, having produced so many great wingers over the years. Like Portugal have moved towards a more balanced sort of area. And if you look at a wide player like Bernardo Silva, he's a wide player that's not really a wide player. And if you speak to Portugal fans, they'd rather have him as a number 10 anyway. So maybe that would have been the opportunity for Martins. I mean, after the Atletico Madrid move, he did want to re-kickstart his career in Monaco. And, you know, there are a lot of careers that are running aground there. I mean, we talked about Jovetic, who's been sort of undercut by injury. But you look at Wissam Ben Yedder, who'd given them the lead early on in that game against Nîmes, you know, scored a lot of goals in La Liga, moved back on a big transfer fee to Monaco. If you're Ben Yedder, do you regret going back to Ligue 1? Because he scored 15 goals. And he's playing for a totally average team.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Possibly. I mean, obviously, you know.
He scored big Champions League goals. And, you know, now you've got the feeling that I'm loaded, but I'm maybe drifting.
Yeah.
At a part of my career that is my prime.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? We talked about Soldado earlier, and it's sort of fascinating how careers really can drift on decisions and don't necessarily come back around. You don't, even when you move on to a better situation afterwards, it doesn't necessarily come back to you.
Yeah, that's true. Bella Italia. And it's definitely the Bella Vita for Rino Gattuso. Everything started to go right for him and Napoli.
San Gennaro. Who stopped the lava, I think. I'm pretty sure. I went to the catacombs in Naples of San Gennaro, and I think there was something about him stopping the lava. I'd had a late night on the wine the night before, and I was in the catacombs quite early. There are details of that tour that's quite hazy, but there's something about him stopping the lava.
But do you think the symbolism of it informed the surprise decision by De Laurentiis to appoint him in the first place?
Who knows? Maybe Rino Gattuso is there. He's stopping the lava with his bare hands.
It's going to take something spectacular to revive Napoli.
He makes movies, so, you know, I can see that sort of theatrical flash. Well, it's been a pretty good run since they lost to Fiorentina. They've now won 3-0 on the bounce, if you count. I was about to say, if you count, you should count the cup game against Lazio. They beat Lazio in the cup, and they beat Juventus, they beat Sampdoria. Really fun game against Sampdoria this weekend.
Yeah, it was.
I would hesitate to say that everything is fixed there, but certainly some things have improved sharply, which is encouraging. You cannot unpick what's happened at Napoli this season from the ownership. I think when Ancelotti was fired, there was this sort of knee-jerk behaviour from a lot of people where it was like, oh, Ancelotti's finished, Ancelotti is too nice, Ancelotti doesn't make them work hard enough. And a lot of it, frankly, was nonsense. Mm. This team, so the beginning of the season, came in, I think, with 7 Plimbers of the first team squad going into the last years of their contract. You've got all of that building up to this ridiculous sort of clash about going into the training camp and you know, the owner's son coming into the locker room and trying to dictate to the players while the owner is off in America having a nice time. And then him coming back and threatening to sue people. Since the Fiorentina defeat, after Fiorentina defeat, Napoli went into another litigio, which lasted one night. And I think this is a fascinating moment in the season that at some point, hopefully, we will learn more about. Because they went there for one night and then they cancelled it. And what we have heard, you know, from the club now is, you know, basically, there was a big clear the air talk. There was a, like, up till dawn, no one went to bed talk that night, in which the players and Gattuso sort of really had it out. What we don't know, and what has been sort of mooted a lot in the regional press, is that actually this sort of, these fines, this sort of thing, they've quietly been put to one side.
Right.
Now that's not fact I'm giving you. That's what's being reported. That's what's being suggested. That's what might be something that happened. I certainly think that there has been some rapprochement behind the scenes that has allowed some of this to happen, because I think that what was happening on the pitch was without question a manifestation of players' mindsets. And you look at the fact even that Mertens, whose, you know, future isn't resolved, but, you know, his future's still to be determined, but finally back in the team this weekend and actually scoring a goal, and you think something has changed, because he was away getting, you know, treated, and that was a very sort of peculiar.
He's back home in Belgium, wasn't he, getting treated?
But it was a very peculiar, is he really injured situation that was going on with that. So I think there's more to this story than we've seen. But in terms of what Gattuso has done, right from the beginning, there was this sort of idea of, we're going to wind it back to what Sarri did. We're going to go back to the 4-3-3. The players are allergic to 4-4-2, which is nonsense, because they played some great games in a 4-4-2. Mm. But we're going to go back to a 4-3-3, which has certainly brought back some familiarity. And I think the really interesting sort of extra thing that's happened in the last little bit is simply they've got someone who can make that work because they've been missing. The idea that you go back to it was ridiculous because you don't have Jorginho anymore. Mm. And I'm not saying he's the same player because he isn't, but I think Diego Demme's arrival has given them something in the middle that fits, that makes that formation work again a little bit. You've got an actual holding player who can tie it together in a way that they haven't had.
And he scored a very, very important goal, didn't he, in that game against Sampdoria after they lost the two-goal lead. Much has been made of him being the first player called Diego since 1991 to score a goal for Napoli.
Well, supposedly
as well.
He was called named Diego.
But
And I think bringing in Lobotka in midfield as well. I mean, Lobotka is a guy who's had good seasons, and then he sort of fell into the sort of weird sort of vortex of Celta, where a lot of good players have gone to become terrible for reasons that are kind of hard to to fully grasp. But he's been liberated from that now, and I think he's looked good to me in some cases. I think that but that's what they're doing now, though. Surely this is the rebuild of this team. You've got a lot of guys who are leaving probably for free in the summer. And I guess maybe now that the transfer window is closed, maybe there'll be a refocusing here that this is the last couple of months of these guys being here.
I don't want to not give any credit to Gattuso. I realised I said that last, but I didn't. And I think he is doing some things right. And he certainly seems to have empowered Insigne again. Insigne looks like a different player to the one who certainly was a player who seemed not to be getting on well under Ancelotti. Yet. Yeah. That is certainly huge. I think that it was interesting to see Gattuso, even in this game at the weekend, make adjustments during the game. So they started out in 4-3-3. It worked for them at the beginning against Sampdoria because Sampdoria were playing really sort of gentle on the press, and Napoli scored a couple of goals really quickly. Once Sam started to press higher, the game really turned, aided by an extraordinary Quagliarella goal, just a ridiculous first-time volley.
Incredible.
He didn't celebrate, of course, unlike some others against the former clubs. it turned on that. And then Sam were getting on top a bit. And then, actually, because Demme didn't start this game, but Gattuso introduced him, and actually in this game switched to more like a 4-4-2 to mirror what Samp were doing, and it changed the game again, and they were able to get back on top. So he's doing some things well. Mm. Like, I don't want to take away from what he's doing. He's doing some things well. It's just that there's a lot more to it than that.
Game of the week time. We had some interesting ones last week. The last time... you were on with us, Lars. You had Bayern versus Schalke.
Yes.
Not that I want to
put
more, any...
A bit more one-sided than I imagined. I had hopes that David Wagner and his guys would put up some kind of a fight, but good Lord. But there, I mean,
down to the goalkeepers.
But Bayern are... You know, I remember this time last year, we were all sort of... You know, the situation was vaguely similar in the sense that Bayern had had a rough start to the season. It was Dortmund who was top of the league then, but you did see the sort of the servo started cranking and the sort of slightly rusty Terminator was sort of gearing up behind them and sort of jump, sort of charging. It's the same now, except it's worse. They're looking very good now, Bayern. They're looking very slick and terrifying indeed.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I've gone for Bayern versus Leipzig as my game of the week, 5 o'clock on Sunday. It's unusual to have Bayern in this late spot, really. They don't end up in it too often. But it's a really big one. And it's a big one for Leipzig because they've had this significant wobble. In the last couple of weeks. You know, they just about got a point out of Borussia Mönchengladbach last week. A lot of that down to do with a very controversial Alassane Player red card. But Christopher Nkunku scored a brilliant goal to salvage them a point. And then they went and lost in the cup against Eintracht Frankfurt this week. Now, I do sort of wonder if there's a little bit of tension there. Of course, they did sort of make, Julian Nagelsmann did make some light rotation, but then they meant something to them because when they were 2-1 down, they brought Timo Werner on. They wanted to try and save it. And Werner, we talked about Quagliarella and his fantastic volley. Werner missed a lot easier volley a couple of minutes from the end, and then Kostic broke and made it 3-1. But this is absolutely huge for Leipzig, I think. And how much of an influence do we think that the fact that Bayern have retaken the leadership of the Bundesliga could have ahead of this game?
I feel it's a significant moment. I think the thing that matters, or the thing that's significant, is that if you look at those games for Leipzig, so many individual mistakes suddenly. Just look at the goals they've conceded in the last...
Tension, nerves, vertigo.
Yeah, this is what I'm thinking. If you go through the last three games now against Frankfurt, Gladbach, and then Frankfurt again, a number of the goals they've gone in have been just boneheaded defensive mistakes that they're suddenly making. And it's hard not to then... It's a little bit of a lazy conclusion, but it's a hard not to draw a line to the fact that they're feeling the pressure a little bit with the sort of the sleek Terminator of Bayern sort of ramping up in the background or in the foreground now, I expect, and just scoring a bunch of goals and just looking tremendous.
Sleek Terminator. I like that. Yeah. So give me your game of the week, Lars.
Well, I'm going to go, well, speaking of sleek Terminators, I'm going to go to France and and watch PSG to take on Lyon. Just because, listen, as much as he can be a nitwit, Neymar at the moment is looking amazing. He's been so good for PSG recently and putting in the kind of performances that makes you think it's hard to argue that any player is worth the transfer fees they're being paid. But you can, the way he's playing now, you can see, okay, fair enough. This is the guy you want to be the focal point of the grand PSG experiment and you want to sell shirts around the world and all this. I mean, he has been very, very good and just an attraction to watch. Lyon is one of a very, very few teams in this league who, in theory, has the talent to give Paris Saint-Germain a game. I know it's not been a great year for them. They've been inconsistent. But there are players there that, if they all have a good day, they could give them some sort of opposition. I think it should be fun to watch.
You've got to remember as well, Nicky, the debut of Rudy Garcia for Marseille was away at Paris Saint-Germain. It was 0-0, and Marseille, I think, were the first team since they'd started taking the numbers in Ligue 1 to have not had a shot. Not a shot on target,
That is a great stat.
I mean, it is classic parking the bus.
That is a great stat.
I don't know where you learned that, but anyway. What's your game of the week?
Well, spouse us what? No, come on. It's the Milan derby this weekend, so it's an easy one for me, I'm afraid. It's definitely a big one. You think Juventus are playing on Saturday, so they're away to Verona. I don't think you can assume they win that. Verona have just taken points off Napoli and Lazio. So
yeah.
Verona, that's not a gimme. But if Juventus win that, then obviously the pressure is on Inter to respond. If they don't win it, it's going to be another week when Inter have a real opportunity to close the gap and they won't want to blow it like they did last time. So pressure on Inter, who of course haven't got Lautaro Martinez, he's suspended, against the Milan team that have been slightly resurgent with Ibrahimovic back around, and of course Ibrahimovic with his own history against Inter as well. Actually, Milan have won three of their last four. They drew against Verona, slightly lucky in a way because Verona were kind of on top until they went down to 10 men. But yeah, this is a Milan team that certainly can defend well, that's starting to show some attacking life with Ibra in the formation. Not that he's individually been brilliant, but I think he's sort of knits things together and offers them, I think, an idea of a threat that teams are responding to, and he certainly gives them a target man. But even sort of putting him to one side, they are capable of being a very solid defensive side. And with no Martinez, against Udinese, Lukaku basically resolved it on his own. Inter were very bad at the weekend. And then at a certain point in a very dull game, he just turns a half chance into a goal. They get another penalty moments later and that's it.
Yeah, there's a lot on him at the moment, isn't
there? Yeah, I think this game has got a lot riding on Lukaku for Inter. Obviously, we're going to see more of Eriksen, who made his debut last weekend, and there's hope for some other players to do something. But I think this is a tough game for Inter. Go through the teams player for player. They're better than Milan still, they are. But, you know, Milan are alive again. And actually, Milan, when you look at the league table and you think of how sort of far out of it they felt for so long, they're only 7 points off the Champions League places. It's not impossible. Like, it's not unthinkable. So there's things riding on this for everyone. And I suppose that Verona-Juventus game may also influence quite how pressured it feels.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.